their shared song. Outside the wall-mounted pods, an intruder roams the halls of the choir chambers. Savitar moves amongst the fleeing slaves and thralls in a muscled sprint, sparing them from the fall of his blade. They are insects to him, so irrelevant that they may as well not exist. He pauses at her pod. He knows that he has only seconds at best, and each heartbeat spent with her is a heartbeat wasted, but still he finds himself compelled to remain. She sleeps inside, a girl child of bruised skin, strapped fetal in the cushioned gnosis pod. The fall of her ragged hair hides her empty eye sockets. Though she is almost motionless in the atmosphere-controlled life cradle, Savitar lingers just long enough to see her fingertips twitch. Soft, smooth fingers that will never know the grip of a weapon.
So that's what you look like?
Within the gnosis coffin, the girl sleeps on, even as she projects the words into his mind. She doesn't speak of the hundreds of scars lining his pale flesh, or the unnatural blackness of his eyes.
You look tired, Jago.
His only reply is a blood-stained grin. Then he's gone. Duty calls. As the chainsword bites into the choir's primary gnosis pod, it vents oxygen as pressurized gas and coolant as a spillage of clear, fizzing liquid. The occupant, a wizened and grey-haired revenant of a man by the name of Nemok, is 30 Terran standard years old. He looks 50 and has the health of a man of 70. Astrotelepathy is an unkind vocation. The brighter a mind burns, the more voraciously it eats through the body's resources. This ruined man screams in blind panic as he's pulled from his cushioned cradle. But even weakened by disorientation and stunned by pain, instinct doesn't desert him entirely. As he's hauled into the air by impossibly strong hands, he reaches for the lash at his hip, only to find that it isn't there. Unlike most astropaths, the overseer's eye sockets aren't empty. Crude bionics whir and click as they seek to refocus, offering him the distorted image of a towering man he doesn't know, staring into his face with black eyes that he doesn't recognize, whispering in a voice he's never heard before.
I have come for you.
Overseer Nemok's first word after awakening is a single syllable. He asks what many men in his position might well ask.
Why?
His first word is also his last. Savitar collars him with his own lash, garrotting the helpless man with the same weapon Nemok used to beat the youngest member of his choir until her spine gave out. Jago Savitarian is an experienced murderer, well familiar with the force required to kill a man in any way the mortal mind can imagine. He strangles the master of astropaths slowly, lovingly, his gene-enhanced muscles barely straining, using just enough strength to drag out the execution without breaking the psyker's neck. The overseer's psychic sense is a maddened, feral thing, pathetically flapping against the Night Lord's mind as uselessly as his thin fingers claw at Savitar's unyielding flesh. His eyes bulge. The flesh of his face darkens from red to purple and finally to blue. His struggles weaken, become twitches, and finally cease. Savitar doesn't let go, not yet. For all his flaws, he's a thorough soul when it comes to duty. Huge, ornate doors, sealed against intrusion, finally open to admit a phalanx of knights in black armor. The Dark Angels surround him, raising their bolters to take aim. Savitar calls out to them.
I am justice!
With a last, wrenching twist, he breaks the corpse's neck and casts it onto the deck by his bare feet.
I am judgment! I am punishment!
And I surrender.
Hmm.
He sits alone in the blackened stillness, listening to the slow rhythm of his breathing. A sense of serenity cloaks him, and a feeling of cold, cold focus that has eluded him for decades. When he dreams now, it is not of the dead, but of the endless night between worlds, the deepest void where a thousand threats drift away from the light of loyal suns. The domains of aliens and monsters, forced into exile by the Great Crusade, still crying out to be extinguished once and for all. The true threats to mankind. The girl's voice comes to him again at last.
Jago, are you still alive?
And in the darkness of his cell, Sevatar smiles. Master of the First by Gav Thorpe. Performed by Gareth Armstrong, Tim Bentinck, Jane Collingwood, and Jonathan Keeble. Directed by Samuel Gunn. Produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library. The commands of the drill sergeants drifted through the open window, harsh alongside the bucolic hiss of the wind and the buzz of insects that drifted through the hot summer air. The clump of boots was almost perfectly in time, almost but not quite, and this became a cause for more shouting from the sergeants. If he closed his eyes, Astolan could almost believe that he was back on the plains where he had been born. He had to close his eyes to ignore the towering fortifications of Alderuk that surrounded him and the comm panels and data displays of the guard post command chamber. The door slid open with a rumble of well-oiled gears, revealing Captain Melian, one of Astolan's company commanders. The captain bowed his head in greeting.
Chapter Master, you wanted to see me.
Former Chapter Master, Captain. My rank is still held in abeyance. My summons was in reply to your request that we might have a conversation in private.
Astolan waved a hand at the unthinking dials and screens and automated systems of the guard chamber.
There is nobody here to observe us.
I'm not sure how to express myself on the matter I wish to discuss. I have reservations.
Doubts?
Yes, doubts, Chapter Master. Regarding the Calibanites.
There are no Tedans and Calibanites anymore, Melian. We are all Dark Angels.
Melian did not have a chance to reply before an alert beeped onto one of the comm panels and Astolan turned to acknowledge the incoming message. He read it in silence.
Interesting.
What's that, Chapter Master?
A departure. The Lord Cypher and Brother Librarian Zahario. Unscheduled shuttle run. Launch permission is sealed by Luther himself.
This is exactly what I mean. And why does Luther maintain this superfluous position of Lord Cypher? It's antiquated.
Astolan scanned the details. The shuttle's flight plan was registered to take them west, but their trajectory was plotted for the northern transits. He said nothing to Melian, but it was a disturbing thought that Zahariel and Cypher were undertaking a secretive mission so near to the abandoned North Wilds arcology. The sound of a shuttle's engine drifted away, but it stirred Astolan's memory again. Melian shifted awkwardly.
I am intruding, my lord. Forgive me.
I was just thinking, actually, of the day the Emperor's gunships fell upon my people. I remember the chatter of chain guns and the screams of the dying. The anti-air cannons on the backs of our megaphones thundered in reply, driving off the aerial attack. But soon, the ground troops stormed in. Thunder warriors, Melian. Did you ever see their like?
I did not.
Crude, compared to the warriors of the Legiones Astartes that would later recruit young Meriel Astalan, but far stronger than any techno-barbarian of the poor Sibran nomad clans. It was a massacre.
Did you not mourn your blood kin?
Only until I was recruited into the Emperor's Legion.
The First Legion?
The only Legion. I was one of the first 5,000. You will never know how it felt to claim that honor.
Melian nodded respectfully. There were many Terrans within the ranks of the Dark Angels, but most had been recruited after other legions had been founded. They were not the sharp arrowhead, but rather the shaft that followed it. Astalan returned his attention to his subordinate.
So, you were saying something about Calibanites?
Melian's list of deficiencies and accusations was specific and betrayed at least a year of cataloguing such misdemeanors.
And you know, my lord, that not all the Calibanites are even Dark Angels. Well, not Space Marines.
You speak of Lord Luther and the others who were too old to become true legionaries?
I do. They should never have been part of the Legion.
Astalan barely suppressed a sigh.
Anything else?
No. I thank you for your time, Chapter Master. I'm sorry to have wasted it. I knew you would not be interested. I did not wish to disturb you, and voiced my concerns to Brother Captain Galadan instead. I have to admit, he told me to stop worrying about Luther and to concentrate on keeping my own company sharp for battle. Then later, he suggested that I speak to you after all.
Astalan regarded Melian carefully. There had to be a reason why Galadan had sent him to their chapter master. Perhaps he hoped Astalan would chastise the captain and dissuade him from further meddling. Or was there more to it than that?
Galadan was right that you come to me. You have spoken of incidents, infractions. But more generally, what concerns you?
The recruits, my lord. They're being trained in the warfare of the Legiones Astartes, but they're being taught the old culture of Caliban. They're being raised more like Knights of the Order.
The Order? The group that once took the young lion as its Grand Master? It is defunct. Only a few titles and ceremonies remain to honor the Primarch's past.
Melian's agitation grew, and he strode to the window and gazed out, brow furrowing as he watched the Calibanite recruits below.
It's more than that. There's no mention of the Emperor in the new oaths of dedication. The recruits swear to defend Caliban against all foes instead.
The lion returned Luther to Caliban as its guardian. We no longer even have any warships. We are a defense force in all but name.
You approve of these changes?
I am ambivalent, Melian. Let us be honest. We've become irrelevant. The lion sent us here to rot, while Luther creates the Legion of Tomorrow. A legion from Caliban.
Melian turned and shook his head, not in denial, but annoyance.
But you know the galaxy has changed! The last supply ships brought word of...
None of this matters. Those supply ships left years ago. We have been forgotten. What do you want from me? Should I insist that Luther reinstate the old oaths?
Looking away again, Melian hesitated. Astalan was about to berate him for wasting his time, but some instinct told him to wait. There was more to this than a captain frustrated at being trapped on this throne-forsaken world.
You spoke to Galadan. Have you shared these thoughts with any others? others that might feel the same as we do.
We? You agree with me then, my lord?
With your concerns, of course. You know I have no particular love for the Calibanites, and that my loyalty has ever been to the Emperor, first and foremost. The fact that we languish on this planet is proof of that. I often wonder if there was more to Luther's return than we know. But that is of no concern for now. Are there others that share our view?
Quite a few, I'm glad to say. Mostly from the old Legion, from Terra, like us. But a few of the veteran Calibanites, too. We've not yet decided on a course of action.
Action? Careful, Melian. This is a dangerous path to walk. Luther is Grand Master now, second only to the Lion. He has unquestioned authority. Legally, if not morally.
Melian's voice dropped to a conspiratorial whisper, though there was no one to overhear them.
Luther isn't the problem. We already know how we can isolate him and remove him from power. It's the others, the recruits and those loyal to Luther, that cause the problem. They are too many, and we are too few to force the issue.
Astolan thought for a moment.
Then we need a mandate to act. The only way we can get that is from off-world. A message from Terra, or perhaps even the Primarch himself, would go a long way to justifying what needs to be done. If Luther has no authority to remain, his followers will back whatever action you take to remove him.
You really think we might be able to do something?
I confess I did not know there was wider support for our opinions. It would help your cause a lot if a former chapter master, one appointed by the Emperor and held in high regard in the old Legion, was to be the figurehead.
Melian nodded.
Oh, your experience, your reputation would be a tremendous boost to our efforts, chapter master.
It is settled then. I need you to assemble a gathering. Not everyone, just the officers, who can speak confidently for the forces under their command.
As you wish. I'm truly grateful for your understanding and participation, my lord. I know we face a difficult time, but with your leadership, we shall return the Legion to the right path.
I am sure of it, Captain.
When Melian had left, Astolan used the comm panel to establish an unlogged, secure vox link.
Galadan.
My lord.
Report to the guard post immediately.
As the hatchway of the magazine creaked open, a soft conversation within fell to silence. The room was emptied of stores, save for just a few boxes scattered on the metal shelving units. Astolan stepped over the threshold to be greeted by more than a dozen pairs of inquiring eyes in the yellow gleam of the artificial lights. He recognized most of the faces, half of them he had fought alongside for almost two centuries. A few, Calibanites to a man, were unknown to him, but he had to trust in Melian's judgment. Two, Nereides and Temur, were chapter masters. Like his, their commands had been suspended for undisclosed reasons. Melian moved to the front of the crowd and held up his hands.
Brothers! Master Astolan is the reason you have been brought here. He is sympathetic to our cause and desired to be heard.
There were no objections. Astolan took this as his cue to speak.
We are all here because we share a certain viewpoint. An opinion regarding the nature of the Dark Angels Legion and what it means to be a true servant of the Emperor. These past years have been hard, but we have borne our reduced status with stoic dignity, as would be expected of any warrior of the First Legion. But a time is approaching when such stoicism will not be enough. A tipping point will come.
Those who believe in what the Emperor has created must face a choice, or else be swept up by events beyond our control.
Temur, a long-serving Terran legionary with a bionic left arm and a heavily scarred face, stepped forwards, his voice electronically rendered through a vox grill.
And you are the one to lead us past this tipping point, Smerier.
I will force nothing upon you. That is not my purpose. I come only with a suggested course of action.
Very well. What do you propose?
Astolan put a finger to the vox bead in his ear.
Please come in.
Brighter light broke into the dimness as the hatchway opened again, silhouetting a short, slender woman in the uniform of the Imperial Army Auxilia that had been stationed on Caliban since the arrival of the Imperium.
My lords.
Astolan closed the hatch behind the woman and took up a relaxed stance next to her, dwarfing the officer with his bulk.
Marquesa Colonel Bethelyn Tylane, my brothers. If you do not know her, she is Vice Commander of the Garrison Forces. Redundant on a world now populated by more than 30,000 battle-ready legionaries, you will agree. But she shares our concerns about Luther's loyalties.
Temur looked unimpressed.
The garrison is not enough to swing the balance of military power in our favor. What use is she to us?
Astolan did not speak, but looked at Lady Tylane, nodding for her to answer the question.
The Caliban Defense Force regiments were created to provide internal and planetary security, allowing the warriors of the Legion to prosecute their own wars, safe in the knowledge that the home world was secure. These duties have, as Master Astolan put it, become redundant with the presence of so many legionaries on Caliban. Since the unrest at the North Wilds, we and the Jaegers have been rendered mostly ceremonial, restricted to the guarding of non-Legion facilities.
There was discontented muttering, and Astolan held up a hand to silence it.
Silence, brothers! Lady Tylane is a senior officer of the Imperial Army and is deserving of your attention and respect.
Some of the officers looked suitably chagrined, Temur amongst them. A few glared in irritation at Astolan, but no further objections were raised, and Lady Tylane continued.
While the Dark Angels maintain their own chantry within the walls of Aldaruk, there is another Astropath Tower located not far from the Rock for the use of Imperial personnel, mercantile interests, and the like. Since the unforeseen removal of the North Wilds administrators, the tower at Redovac has gone largely unused, and most likely forgotten. The guarding of this facility falls to a core of the defense forces under my command.
Astolan could see the glimmering of understanding in the eyes of the others, and took up the final part of the explanation.
Captain Melian informs me that there are already plans to isolate and confine Luther. While that is in progress, another task force, consisting of our loyal companies, will secure the tower at Redovac and will send messages both to Terra and to our Primarch. We seek confirmation that original Legion protocols are to be restored, and, in the absence of the Lion, the former command structure is to be reinstated until his return. The day-to-day defense of Caliban and the ongoing recruitment process will continue unaffected, but we will have restored access to external communication. Communication that is currently the sole purview of Luther and his coterie from the Order. Who knows what communiques they have withheld from us until now?
A thin smile on his lips, Temur nodded in appreciation.
Apologies, Maria. I think I did you a disservice. Forgive my earlier doubts. Your plan seems eminently suitable. Avoiding direct conflict with the bulk of Luther's forces whilst securing our own position. I do have just one further remark.
Please speak freely.
You mentioned that we would reinstate the standard Legion protocols and structure until the Lions return. Correct me if I'm wrong, but With Luther removed, would that not make you the highest and longest serving officer of the Legion? You would, I believe, become a Legion Master.
Silence fell. Astellan shrugged.
It had occurred to me, to be truthful. I was marked for leadership before we discovered Caliban and the old Legion hierarchy was altered to the wings. In the event that we are successful, and a restructuring of the Legion takes place, I must insist that a council of chapter masters confirm any promotion.
Temur looked to the others, and though there were some doubtful faces, most of the officers nodded their assent.
I cannot see any further objections at this point. We will continue to sound out those under our command to identify any who cannot be counted upon in the days ahead. We will find suitably distracting duties for them when the time comes to make our move.
As the gathering broke up, the Space Marines leaving in ones and twos, Lady Tyling turned to Astellan.
It seems we have a consensus, my lord. I confess, I did not expect things to go so smoothly.
Be careful what you say. There are plenty of opportunities for complications still to come. Remember what I told you. Luther must not have any suspicions of what we are doing or why. Surprise is essential.
Why, thank you, Chapter Master. And perhaps you would like to instruct me on how to field strip a Lasgun, too.
Astellan offered no apology, and the Marquesa Colonel did not wait for one. Melian came up to him just as she left.
She has a wicked tongue at times, Chapter Master. You should not accept such insolence.
I need her assistance. Better that she feels in control. For now, at least.
Melian leaned closer and spoke more quietly.
Forgive me, Chapter Master, but I could not help but notice Galadan's absence.
As Master Temur said, there are some that perhaps would not agree with our decisions today. I spoke with Galadan and thought it prudent that he received different orders.
It's a shame. I like Galadan.
I am sure he will come to our way of thinking soon enough. For now, do not speak to him again of your concerns. Let him think that I have silenced them.
As you wish. What would you have me do next?
Nothing. Other than keep your eyes and ears open.
And you, Chapter Master, what are you going to do?
Mustering a sizable number of armed legionaries so close to Redivac is going to arouse interest. I have a training exercise to organize. Live ammunition, of course.
It was perhaps a sign of Luther's growing arrogance that although he commanded tens of thousands of the Legion's finest, only five of their number were tasked with guarding his private quarters in the citadel of Alderuk.
Halt! Come no closer!
Confronted by three chapter masters and the same number of company captains with pistols and blades drawn, it was little surprise that they chose not to fight, except one. Astellan watched with detached resignation as the warrior at the security console outside the doors drew his sword. He hung back, allowing Temur to take the lead.
Stand aside! By order of your superiors!
The warrior vaulted the console, slashing his sword towards Temur's neck.
For Caliban! And the order!
The chapter master, who had fought in more than 100 campaigns, blocked the strike easily, and with similar lack of effort, turned his blade back and held it against the legionary's throat.
Do you yield?
Temur's demand was made while the others were being disarmed by Nereides and the others. The legionary's only reply was a wordless snarl and a fist which glanced from Temur's breastplate as he stepped back. A second later, the chapter master's energy-wreathed sword protruded from the warrior's chest, illuminating his face from below with a blue aura, his features a mask of pained surprise. Temur pulled the blade free with a look of genuine regret, letting the body clatter to the floor. Nereides and Astellan accepted the necessity of the Space Marine's death without reaction, but the lesser captains paled, realizing only now that their coup was never going to be bloodless. That was the tipping point, Astellan noted. There could be no turning back for them. He pushed forwards to the security console while the remaining captives were secured with electromanacles.
No alarm raised. No lockdown.
His fingers moved across the keypad, and behind him the security bolts on the doors snapped open. Temu's blood was up, and he led the way, thrusting open the double doors without delay. They searched the reception hall and the bedchamber and found them empty, although reports had confirmed that Luther would be in his quarters at that hour. Only one room remained, the Grand Master's sanctum, located on the floor above. Astellan was the last up the stairwell, power sword and bolt pistol at the ready. When Temur reached the doorway at the top, he did not pause, but crashed shoulder first into the timbers, splitting the jamb and sending the door splintering from its hinges. Luther stood at a high window, looking south across the lower halls and towers of Alderuk. He had been a large man, broad at the shoulders, thick at the neck, even before the augmentations wrought upon him by the Legion's apothecaries. There was a dry, cracked quality to his skin, and artificially reinforced veins bulged in his neck as he tensed. The Grand Master of the Order held a large book bound in deep red leather, a small dagger used as a bookmark on the open pages. Then he snapped the book shut and turned calmly, his expression guarded as he looked at the intruders with a raised eyebrow.
What manner of entrance is this? If you had but asked, I would gladly have granted you an audience.
Temur was in no mood for Luther's humor and held his bolt pistol to the Grand Master's head.
By the authority of the Emperor of Mankind, I charge you with perverting command of the First Legion, for insubordination to the orders of your Primarch, and sundry other charges to be detailed at a later time. You are to disarm yourself and relinquish all command of Caliban and its forces.
Luther's gaze settled on Astellan, standing by the door.
You too, Meria. I thought you were wiser than this. Do you know what manner of calamity you are about to unleash? You cannot possibly believe that this farce will succeed.
I thought you might harbor doubts about my sincerity. Permit me to allay them.
Astellan placed a small hololithic receiver on the desk and activated his vox.
Begin transmission.
It was Lady Tylaine that answered.
Connection established, Chapter Master. Ready to move on your command.
The hololith sprang into life, showing a needle-like tower that rose from lightly forested hills. Luther looked more closely at the grainy image.
Redivac? The Astropath facility.
It is.
Astellan manipulated the display to focus on the main valley leading to the tower. Several thousand legionaries were advancing through the hills, flanked by battle tanks and walkers from the defense force. Even in the projected light of the hololith, it was clear that most of the space marines were clad in the black livery of the original Terran chapters, but some sported plates of dark green, showing that they had been raised on Caliban. Luther straightened, his expression unreadable.
I see.
Not yet. Continue to observe. Marquesa Colonel, please execute your orders. This instruction cannot be countermanded.
Affirmative, Chapter Master. All units are in position. Commencing action immediately. Let us hope that history remembers us fondly, or not at all.
The lead elements of the Rebel Space Marine Force were almost in position when a succession of bright flashes broke the gloom beneath the tree line. A moment later, detonations bloomed among the ranks of advancing warriors, followed almost instantly by the reverberating impacts of shells over the Voxlink. The escorting armored vehicles plowed to a stop and turned their turrets on the Dark Angels. Jets screamed in from the clouds, and more tanks rumbled into view, while detachments of Defense Force soldiers emerged from the trees at a run. With them was a full chapter of Space Marines, the company banner of Captain Galadan flying above the command section. More concussive blasts shook the advancing rebels as bombs and tank cannons laid down a carpet of destructive fire.
Damn them! What are they doing?
Temur and the other rebel officers in the sanctum chamber were transfixed by the hollow display. But Luther's stare snapped up to Astellan. In that instant, there was recognition in his eyes. Armor shattered, and flesh sizzled as Astellan's first cut took off Temur's pistol hand. Luther was already moving towards Nereides, the dagger from the book held before him. Astolan's sword parted Temur's throat even as he turned in shock towards his attacker, and a third strike lanced through the chest of Captain Azrapal. Luther drove the point of a dagger into Nereides' left eye, driving it up to the hilt in the socket as he rode the collapsing space marine to the ground. The bark of bolt pistols seemed deafening in the confines of the chamber, and Astolan flinched. Feeling an impact on his left pauldron, he spun and returned fire, dropping Captain Goswin at close range. Captain Orne backed away from him, readying his sword to strike instead at Luther before the Grandmaster could rise. Astolan did not hesitate, hacking off the captain's head with two ragged blows. He glanced back at the Hololith, seeing the rebel ranks capitulating to Galadan and Lady Tylaine, surrounded by Imperial Armor Divisions and their Legion brothers, with devastating air power above. Astolan did not blame them.
I hoped more of them would surrender.
Luther watched them throwing down their weapons, the column disintegrating in shame before Astolan's forces. The box link brought confirmation from Lady Tylaine.
Captain Galadan is formally accepting the surrender, Chapter Master. The rebels have little desire to fight other space marines. My forces will continue to provide overwatch and support.
My thanks, Marquis Akana. You have done us a great service today. Have the rebels brought to Alderuk for the judgment of Lord Luther?
Luther grunted in derision.
Twice cursed. To be traitors and cowards. However, I praise your foresight in not ordering them all executed.
It seems wasteful. They might be taught to see the error of their ways. I hear that the order can be very persuasive.
Indeed. Though I'm not sure where we will keep so many prisoners.
There are dungeons beneath the rock. I suggest you carve out more cells.
Luther turned his head to regard Astolan coldly.
Why not alert me to this uprising before now? All bloodshed could have been avoided, had you informed me when you first learned of the rebellion.
I drew out those truly committed to your downfall. Open action against you justifies this response, without question.
And at what point did you choose to betray them?
From the outset, of course.
I find that curious. You are Terran, and your distaste for Caliban and its people is known. Was it out of loyalty? Perhaps you saw that the rebellion was doomed from the beginning, and wished to curry favor with the winning side.
Nothing so devious, my lord. My reasons for supporting you are simple. I do not know everything that has transpired between you and the Lion, but I can tell that you no longer work to his aims.
Astolan gathered his thoughts.
When the Emperor exterminated my people, I did not lament. I saw that the execution of power could be righteous, even if it brought misery. To oppose it was pointless, a meaningless act of vanity that would end in death. Now I see that a different power is rising, and it is similarly futile to decry it. I prefer action to clever words, Grandmaster. The Lion is a taint. All that has befallen the First Legion since we discovered your benighted world is due to his misguided influence. To oppose him, to set myself against the woes he has caused us, I would pledge allegiance to a more worthy lord. Tell me I was wrong. That you are fully committed and loyal to the Primarch. And I will join those prisoners right now.
Luther's thoughtful silence proclaimed more than any words ever could. The rebel legionaries were interred in barracks and guardrooms, watched over by Luther's troops, while the most senior dissenters were escorted to the cells beneath Alderuk. Astolan waited at the main gate with Galadan, watching the procession of dejected warriors filing past.
Luther approved your promotion to Chapter Master, then?
He did. The first favors spilling from the hand of our new overlord?
No. Confirmation that he shares my faith in you.
Astolan saw Melian, but the captain turned his head away in disgust, not willing even to look at his former master. Astolan looked back to Galadan.
I'm glad he survived.
Melian? Yes, he's a good captain. It's a shame he got himself caught up in this mess.
He'll be useful later.
Later? What do you mean?
Oh, you can't fool me, brother. I know that Luther is our ally for the moment. But don't expect me to believe for a second that you really think he is your superior.
I am shocked at the suggestion. There can only be one Master of the First. I will not suffer the lion any longer. So, that leaves us with Luther.
Galadan looked unconvinced, and Astolan could not meet his gaze without a smile.
For now, at least.
Malkador, First Lord of the Imperium, by L.J. Goulding. Performed by John Banks, Beth Chalmers, Jenny Funnell, Jonathan Keeble, and Toby Longworth. The hour was late when Malkador finally came to the narrow stone staircase leading to the Residencia in the highest reaches above the Katmandau precinct. His weary, sandaled feet took each step with a care that could only ever be born of too many remembered falls over the years, and he relied heavily upon his staff to keep his balance as he climbed. It had been dark when he left his private apartments several hours before dawn, and it was dark again, now that he felt enough had been achieved that he might return to them. His duties had stolen the day from him, just as they had the day before, and the day before that, as far back as anyone else in the palace could remember. Every waking moment lost to the innumerable concerns of war and governance. There were conveyors and elevators that could shorten his route and allow him to rest his aching bones a little longer before he would need to rise once more. Doubtless, the watch commanders of the Helios Icon would even approve a chartered ornithopter flight anywhere within the inner or outer wards, whenever the Imperial Regent required it. But always he made the journey on foot and alone. It was a ritual of sorts, and the Sigilite knew better than most that rituals were important. He reached an intermediate landing and paused to catch his breath. The psi flame at the head of his staff flickered on, cold and silent, casting more light than the pale lumen sconces set into the archway overhead. Malkador did not turn at the sound of other footsteps echoing up after him, but allowed himself a tired smile.
You would keep an old man from his glass of wine and a warm bed, Alam? I feel I have earned both today.
The adept was lean, studious, and always immaculate in the grey robes of the Chosen. Though he usually carried himself with all the decorum expected of his rank, it was clear this night that something else drove him on. He reached the landing and knelt before his master, bowing his head. His voice was hoarse, his eyes raw.
My Lord Regent, you should come.
An unexpected chill prickled at Malkador's skin, and the smile melted away. It seemed that the shadows beyond the light of his staff grew slightly darker in that moment, and he drew the cowl of his hood tighter.
Ah.
It will be soon, then. I had hoped for a little more time.
The physicians say... They say there is nothing more they can do. She was asking after you again.
All mortal weariness forgotten, Malkador lowered himself down, his simple chains of office trailing gently on the flagstones. He put a hand on the younger man's shoulder.
Let us go swiftly, then. I would be at her side when the end comes.
The chambers of Magister Sybil Niester were far, far from the towers of the City of Sight, both literally and by many more subtle definitions. Malkador hesitated for just a moment at the oak-paneled door, running his fingertips over the grained surface of the wood, feeling the unmistakable frisson of side-dampening crystal circuitry hidden beneath it. He steeled himself and pushed the door open. The lights had been turned down low. Beside the bed, a sister hospitaller with a kind, earnest face looked up at Malkador and Alum as they entered. She bowed deeply and gestured for her apprentice to do the same.
My lord, I have followed the instructions of the Honorable Shiragian General. The Lady Magister is as comfortable as we can make her.
I'm right here. I can hear you. I'm blind, not deaf.
Malkador laughed, slipping off his sandals and stepping onto the threadbare carpets that surrounded the bed.
Grumpy as ever, Sybil. I hope you've been putting these young upstarts through their paces. Otherwise, they'll never learn a thing, eh?
The merest hint of a smile flickered across the deep lines of Niasta's face, pulling at the corners of her sunken, sightless eyes.
Too bloody right.
She jerked a thumb towards the Medicaid servitor stationed at the other side of the bed.
Take that awful machine with you. All I can hear every night are his clockwork scrods ticking away like a broken chrono. He wants oiling. Take the money from my purse if you need to.
The sister hospitaller and her apprentice left, as quietly and respectfully as they could, with the servitor a few steps behind them. Malkador watched them go, leaning thoughtfully on his staff.
That's how they'll remember you now, you realize. And to think, you used to be so polite and diplomatic.
Niasta let her empty gaze fall from the upper reaches of the chamber to where the sigillite stood. Her irises were permanently bloodshot and ragged, with slashes of sickly yellow around uneven pupils misted by cataracts.
With the greatest respect, Master, when I join the ranks of the recently deceased, I plan on paying very little heed to the expectations and gossip of the living.
Her eyes flickered to the shadows by the door.
And you, Alum Carpin, stop skulking around back there. You can bloody well leave too if you're just going to mope in the corner. I'm not having my final moments ruined by you snivelling. Go and finish your writing and give me some peace and quiet.
The adept shuffled into the light, wringing his hands together.
Lady Magister, I wanted to...
Oh, my Lord Sigillite, please take one of these pillows and throw it at him. I can see his maudlin soul light clear enough, but still, I think your aim will be better than mine.
Malkador trudged to Alum's side.
You can go. We should give her the dignity of being able to choose the company she keeps. There is nothing you can say to her that she does not already know, and it clearly means a great deal to her that you have remained close by for so many months, when I could not.
You are sure, my lord?
The sigillite smiled, ushering him to the door.
I am sure. Go. As she says, you should return to your great work. I am very much looking forward to reading it when it is done.
Pausing at the threshold for one last glance towards the dying Magister, Alum pulled his robes tightly about himself and went out into the night's chill once more. All was silent in that chamber for a long while. In the distance, far away to the north, and yet still within the bounds of the Imperial Palace, the pealing of the great bell of lost souls could be heard, just as it always could in these dark times. Making his way to the foot of Nyasta's bed, Malkador pulled back his hood and let his silver hair fall freely. He straightened a little and peered down his hawk-like nose at her.
They are all gone. We are alone.
The astropath grimaced. She sagged into the blankets, letting out a thin gasp as she let all pretense slide away. Her angular, proud features were wizened by pain.
I'm sorry, Master. I am so very sorry. I could not let them see me like this. But I did not mean for them to bring you here, to distract you from... My Lord, Master, please forgive me.
Malkador remained unmoving, and apparently unmoved. He scrutinized every minute detail of her face.
Why is it you think I am here, Sybil?
Tears ran from the astropath's ruined eyes.
Because in serving you, I have been your voice and your ear in the outer darkness. No other knows so much about what you have done, and the hidden truths you hold in trust for the good of mankind. The messages I have relayed for you, the many secrets I have kept, that I still keep, could bring the Imperium to its knees just at the moment when a little ignorance would go a long way.
She paused for a moment, as if considering whether or not to take the thought to its logical conclusion.
Because I know the things that lurk in the span of a mortal's final breath. The things that our noble Emperor assured us for so long were not real, that hunger for our very souls. And so, I imagine you are here now to make sure that when my life flashes before me, no one and nothing else can steal a glimpse.
The sigilite nodded slowly, then moved over to the empty desk in the corner of the room, its green marble top inlaid with the icon of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica in pearlescent coral. He held up his staff, peering at the twin-headed eagle that basketed the Psyflame with its iron wings.
I think perhaps you have misjudged me. Many have over the years.
He raised an open hand to the cold fire and closed his fingers in a deliberate, measured gesture. With a psychic pulse like a skipped heartbeat, the flames were snuffed out, and Nyasta flinched at the force of it. Then Malkador laid the inert staff carefully upon the desk, pulled out the wooden chair beneath, and dragged it over to her bedside.
For now, I will put aside my duties and the war, even the title of Sigilite.
He seated himself and took her hand. Her grip was weak, and her skin felt almost as thin as parchment.
For now, we shall merely be two old friends, speaking plainly and fondly, as old friends do when no one else is around to hear. Beyond that, there is nothing in all the galaxy that need concern us.
I don't believe you.
You don't believe me?
No, my lord. You just called me old. Bit much, isn't it? I mean, especially coming from you.
Apologies. Sometimes the Gothic tongue can be somewhat inelegant.
No excuses. I don't think we can be friends now. That's a pity. A real pity. My lord, Malkador, how old are you? I mean to say, I've been in your service for centuries, since you became First Lord, and you've not aged a day in all that time. Even when my sight was failing for good, I could tell.
Well, you're cutting straight to the point now, eh?
Time is not on my side. I'm not going to waste it being polite.
Very well, then. I am 6,718 years, 241 days, 11 hours, 8 minutes, and 56 seconds old. And there are days when I feel it.
That is not what I was expecting to hear. So what's your secret? And don't tell me it's juvenile treatments and clean living, because I tried those.
Ah, a secret of mine that you don't know. Many wise and powerful men have wondered the same thing down the years. Even the noble Primarchs themselves whispered their theories when they thought I wasn't listening. It is not enough, it seems, that I act with the authority of the Emperor of Mankind in all things and stand at his side and counsel him openly. All wish to know whence comes such power, such privilege, and if it be something they might take for themselves. And yet very few of them ever dared to ask me directly. For that, if nothing else, you deserve the truth.
It is the Emperor, then. He chose you as his companion and confidant, and from that moment you were blessed with immortality. Even his sons cannot refute this.
No. You have it backwards, Sybil Niasta. I am the last of my order, the last Sigilite. And he was not the Emperor until he met me.
I don't understand.
For the longest time, he was only the greatest of many warlords of old Earth. They knew him, well, they knew him by a different name. And as for his sons, consider this Aquila charm on your wrist. I gifted it to you when we first left the throne world together. But what does it mean?
It is the manifest glory of the Imperium.
What else?
It is the union of Mars and Terra for the good of all.
What else?
The eagle, blind to the horrors of the past, looking instead to the future.
Ah, and there you have it. And may such a dichotomy never be reversed while the Imperium yet endures. But this is not mere symbolism. And as you know, blindness is not always a lack of sight. The Emperor does not dwell upon the past. His attentions are ever focused on his vision for mankind's destiny. And so he does not always remember the lessons that the rest of us have learned along the way. But the Sigilite Order was created to remember, to preserve after a fashion. Without me, the unification of Terra would have been impossible. The Emperor has told me as much.
I cannot imagine you on the battlefield.
Oh, I fought at his side many times, my dear. But humanity's future is built upon the foundations of its past. Not unlike a palace on the mountaintop, if you will. My contribution to unity was in showing him why every other palace, mountain, and empire has fallen. And so it will be again. I will serve him in the way I was always meant to, reminding him of all that has gone before, for as long as he needs me to. But I sense a different kind of sadness in you, Sybil. You are not afraid to die.
I am not.
Speak then. I am here to listen.
I am afraid that things have progressed too far. I am afraid that, for all the Emperor's vision and your wise counsel, the war has taken too many unexpected turns, and everything we have done will be for nothing.
It pains me to hear you say that, truly. That we, he and I, the Imperium, might fail.
Do you not hear the great bell tolling ceaselessly day and night? Each chime a lost soul, another servant of the Imperium fallen. The last I saw, casualty manifests put deaths at Beta Garmin alone in the billions. Billions! In a matter of months. This is not a war that mortals can win. And that scares me more than anything. We can only let the Primarchs murder each other, one by one, and see what remains of the galaxy when...
Lean forward, my dear. Try to breathe. Here, take a sip. Take a sip.
I'm so tired, Mal.
Rest, Sybil. Lie back. Would it comfort you